Blog Talk Radio.
Lovers and everyone else here at Groomer Talk Radio. We have a lot going on at the website right now. Primarily, most of the people who are playing the games, winning hundreds of dollars, are available in prizes if you're interested. It's trivia based, and it's over at the community, the Groomer Talk community. It's very simple to play. You just sign up with your email, answer the questions. We post them almost daily, and that'll be running through October, and then we'll be awarding quite a few prizes, $200 and up, actually, for some of them. So those are always popular year-round, so check those out if you have an interest. Now, today with us, we have returning. It's been about 2 years since Joe's been with us. We asked him to come back because he really has the pulse, as we do here at Grooming Business in a Box with Consultation, on the challenges that are facing owners of grooming businesses today. So we wanted to talk with Joe about that and see what the latest is there and what solutions are possible as we get through all of this. Joe Zuccarello has been in the industry since about, kind of like me. He started at 13 years old. I was around 12 years old. So we go way back. Joe went on, though, after many years, and went into some great work at prestigious pet resorts, all the way up until he even became a vice president of one for over 20 years. He was responsible for leading over 200 staff members and 15 managers. His direction of 6 facilities, which included pet resorts, grooming spas, training academies, grooming instruction programs, and he actually developed a franchise model. In early 2018, Joe joined the team of Melissa Verplank Enterprises, home to multiple professional development solutions, such as LearnToGroomDogs.com, Paragon School of Pet Grooming, White Dog Enterprises, and Whiskers Pet Resort. And he is in the position of VP of Sales, Marketing, and Business Development. He also has his own podcast. You may want to check that out. It's called Hey Joe, and we'll let you know in the show here how you can get a hold of him and get access to that podcast as well. And now I am going to, I believe he's here, I'm going to open his line.
Wonderful.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. How are you? How have
Wonderful.
You been? It's been like two years, I believe, since we've had you on, and we've been through
When you said that, when you said that in the intro, I'm like, wow, has it been 2 years? But I guess it has. We're going to have to do this more often.
I agree. Yeah, but the pandemic sure threw everyone for a loop, and so I do start looking back even on time that started early 2020, and it's like, wow. What have we been through since, early 2020? So, as I mentioned in your intro, and I know you know, one of the greatest challenges there is for someone in grooming is staffing. And I don't think I've ever seen it probably in your 37 years, has it ever been so challenging to staff a grooming business today?
Well, no, and you know, I think even going back, because I did have to sort of, you know, kind of take a step back in time and think, did I have these same struggles, you know, back in the 90s, back in the 2000s? And to some degree, yes. Dog groomers, you know, dog grooming is an art. And these artists that are out there are doing a really great job. They're working really hard. It's a very physically exhausting job, a mentally exhausting job. But there's just not enough dog grooming professionals to go around. And it is more desperate of a situation now than really ever in my experience in the industry. And there's some reasons for that. It's not just because we have fewer people pursuing a career in dog grooming, which is truly a contributor to this deficit of professional dog groomers. But you also have many more dog-oriented businesses. So you have many more pet supplies businesses, and pet supplies businesses want to have grooming so that they are a one-stop shop for their customers. Veterinarians want to have grooming, same reason. More and more mobile groomers are on the road and in driveways grooming dogs. There's many more opportunities for employment for groomers. And then if you take that coupled with fewer groomers or fewer people pursuing a career in dog grooming, that's how we are now at this sort of vacuum of what I'm calling a desperate situation with grooming staffing.
Yes, and I've been finding through, we do a lot of surveys, and I put them out quite a bit, and I actually am fortunate to get a lot of replies, and we're finding that more and more of these groomers coming in today, there's those that want to work in that kind of environment, and then there are those that are thinking that they're going to go on their own eventually. So, and some of those then want to even go right into self-employment, which is not always the best thing. There's a lot of experience that is very valuable by having working with other groomers and finishing your skills. You don't just come out of school fully ready to be on your own, exactly, not really. And there, what else I've found, and perhaps you've seen this as well, but we found that during the COVID pandemic that there were, and I'm compiling these numbers finally, it's going to be in our next issue of our magazine, but there are those that took early retirement. They just said, you know, I'm 3 years away from probably without this pandemic of retiring. So I'm just going to go ahead and retire now. And we got like flushed a lot with the business for sale ads here. And that's how I know this, because I was talking to a lot of them. And then there were those that said, you know, I've struggled to find groomers. I've been an owner for 10 years, and it's always been a struggle to find qualified groomers. And so I'm kind of tired of that. And I think, well, since I had to close, I'm under some restrictions here to operate during the pandemic, and so I'm going to just close right now, but I'm going to downsize. And so it was amazing how we saw a big movement of those that said, the way I'm going to downsize is to close my shop and I'm going to just become a mobile groomer. So now suddenly we had that boom that really hit mobile grooming. But now what we're seeing at this point is there's a very large number. I search statistics all this year, every single day, on new businesses that are opening, new grooming businesses, or it could be grooming department within a business of other pet services or retail. And there's an amazing amount of new businesses that have opened this year. But then when I have called some of them and whatever, they said, we didn't realize it can be very, very hard to find groomers for businesses. Well, what can you advise them about? How should they go about making up a plan to grow a grooming department today?
Right, and everything you said is absolutely accurate. And I would say that if you're an owner, operator, manager, leader of a grooming business out there, obviously, you know, we call talented groomers who are also a really great culture fit in your business. I like to call those folks unicorns, right? Because, and I mean this endearingly when I say, if there's a groomer available, there's usually a reason. And it doesn't always have to be bad, right? But if we have that desperate of a situation for professional groomers out there, if somebody is released from their job or releases themselves from their grooming job, there's a good chance within just a handful of hours that person's going to be hired by somebody else. But it doesn't always mean that those people that are being hired by somebody else is going to be a great culture fit. So while we should always continue to look for talented groomers to join our team, to join our company, the only thing we can do as business owners and managers and leaders that puts us in a little bit more control is to consider that while we will always keep sort of the line in the water, if you would, for recruiting existing groomers, maybe what we need to do is consider growing our own groomers, growing our own grooming producers. And, you know, when you were talking, you reminded me, when I was 13 years old and I got this part-time Saturday gig at a dog grooming salon, did I think 37 years later this would be my career? And I would tell you, I would bet there's a large faction of people that are in our industry that never planned to be in our industry. So, but I would also say that a number of them, especially in the grooming side of things, a number of them were taught by existing groomers. Now, just because you're a great groomer also doesn't make you a really great teacher. The two characteristics, the two profile types or traits could be miles apart. You could be a great groomer, but be terrible at teaching. But also you could be a great teacher, but be a terrible groomer. So we have to figure, how do we as an industry take better control of the industry's future? Because I've often been quoted saying, this is still a very unprofessional profession. And that's because sometimes some of the professionals in our industry don't act very professionally. And so really what we have as an industry is a responsibility to raise the professionalism, to raise that, because at that point then we get better respect and maybe we're seen as legitimate, like other businesses or other trades or career choices are. So my point in all of that is, the way to do that is not to continue to develop people how we've been developing them. Maybe it's time to actually embrace a method to taking back control of our grooming staff destiny, if you would, and start growing them in a model that is responsible, that's professional, that's comprehensive, that actually helps raise that professionalism in the profession. Much like if you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever other trade, whatever other superpower career that takes a skill-based training. The very best ones were taught by the very best. And that's what I think this industry, we are moving there. But we still have a long way to go.
Yes, excellent. That's so true. And I remember back when before my mother wrote her book based on her business and the management side of, you know, she wasn't writing on how to groom, but how do you manage these businesses? And so she just said, well, here's the management system I use. But what she was guided to was to define that profession so we understand what is a professional groomer. And so you're going to look at some of the people that run fine shops, and of course you're working with Melissa Verplank. There's a great example of someone. And I remember she would call my mom, you know, occasionally and talk. And so we sat down and wrote what was needed. And the attorney said, you need a fiduciary relationship statement for grooming. And that was how you'll build, even if you ever went to state licensing of groomers, is what is that? And that fiduciary relationship means, and it was pretty amazing, it takes in everything. What is that relationship between the groomer and the pet owner? What is required to be a professional? What is it that you know that you have to deliver? What do you have to disclose even about the grooming process to the pet owner? And that's how we got her book off the ground, was starting with that. And we tried to talk about that for many years in our first workshops for a while. And some people really got it. There were great groomers that used to come to them. But as you're saying, there were many groomers that weren't really that professional yet. They're very skilled, mm-hmm. perhaps, as groomers, but knowing how to, what is the managing of a professional, and how do you even, and I believe that's even why when you look at the attempts to do vocational education for groomers, very few people really got what that is, because you have to start with that. Well, what is it? That's this relationship that you have with the pet owner, and what do you disclose, et cetera, et cetera. And so obviously people like Melissa did very well and created successful businesses. But let me ask you a question. When you bring in applicants, you have job groomer applicants, what do you think are some of the best interview questions to ask of these people?
Well, so if we're looking for people, there's two different groups of people. If we're considering and embracing the thought of growing our own groomers, and so what we're looking for in that regard, we're looking for experience and asking experiential or situational or circumstantial questions to try to pull from that applicant what is it is in their background that may be indicative of their future success as a professional dog groomer or a dog grooming producer. So if it's somebody that doesn't have any skill and you're going to put them through a program or you're going to even teach them yourself or whatever, you know, it might be worth phrasing some questions such as, give me a time when, or give me a specific example of a time when you were part of a team and you were faced with a challenge. What was your role? What was the challenge? And what was the result? Because, you see, by asking that question versus what we all sort of grew up asking, are you a team player? You see, so you see the difference in the question. Another one might be, tell me about a time when you were new at doing something and everybody around you had skills beyond yours. How did you feel? And how did you deal with that? How did you overcome that? See, that's a whole lot better than saying, are you a continuous learner or do you appreciate learning new things? Right? So you're asking for these examples. And it's okay if they're young people. I'll have people ask me, you know, they'll tell me, well, wait a minute, if I'm interviewing a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old, great. Maybe they were the captain of their chess club in high school. Maybe they were part of a thriving scouting group that, you know, that they had some life experience. You're not necessarily talking about job experiences. So if you're looking for somebody who is not skilled in the art of dog grooming yet, those might be some things you want to ask so that you can try to figure out, are they going to be a good fit? Again, working with their hands, tell me about some time when you had to actually craft something or make something or do something with your hands. What was it? How did you feel about it? How did you learn more about how to do it? And what was the outcome? Right? So if they can pull from their life experiences and give you some examples, that would be great. Now, if we are talking about existing dog groomers, especially somebody like me, I'm not a dog groomer. I've been around dog grooming my entire career. But these hands were not made to be your dog's groomer or your surgeon, right? So, but I love this industry so much. But if you're hiring an existing dog groomer, people like myself might ask them, well, how many dogs can you groom in a day? Seems like a logical question. But the answer that I found that I was often getting, and it took me decades really to figure this out, but the answer that I was getting to my question was more so, how many dogs could they groom in a swell day? Not swell like good, like 70 swell, but like the week before Christmas, right? They could see themselves at their cap grooming 8 dogs a day. But the real question we need to ask these grooming producers is, how many dogs are you willing and capable of grooming every single day that you're here without complaining? So this is going to be a contract. If you tell me 6 dogs a day, so I'm going to come back, I'm going to say, so what you're telling me, we're agreeing right now, that if I give you 6 dogs a day, every day that you're working here, you can always add to that if you want. But if I'm going to give you 6 dogs a day, there's going to be no complaining, right? That's a much better question. Here's another one for you, and I got a lot of them. And you can find, again, if you go to ParagonPetSchool.com website, you'll find a lot of these sample job interview questions under our resource center. But here's another one. It's perfect. If you ask somebody, how much do you want to earn? And they say, I want 50%. But that's not the right answer to the question that I'm asking. How much do you want to earn? That is, at the end of the year, what does the number on your tax form look like for you? What number do you want there? And if they say $50,000 a year, okay, great. Because then what you're going to do is you're going to take that. You've already asked them how many dogs are they willing and capable of grooming every day without complaining. And you're going to then match that up with whatever it is, the percentage, the hourly salary, whatever you want to pay them. You're going to match that up with your average ticket price. And if they did X number of dogs every day for X number of days times the average ticket price, and then however you pay them for those hours or commission or whatever, you're then going to be able to tell them in a follow-up conversation, you definitely can make that here, or here's what you're going to need to do to change, maybe do more dogs per day or whatever, or more complex dogs with higher ticket prices in order to hit the target you want. You see, it's having these conversations early with these grooming producers that make all the difference in the world about who it is that we bring on our team.
Now, what do you tell the average grooming business owner when they find that they just can't find available staff? They're not getting good responses from their ads or whatever way that they're procuring personnel. What should they do?
Well, I think the only thing that they can do at that point, they're going to have to embrace the idea of growing their own grooming producers, growing their own grooming team. And really, when we talk about that, and I mentioned earlier, what are some of the, what I call the predispositions or the DNA traits that make a possible good grooming producer, a long-term grooming producer? And we start them at Paragon. We have level 1, 2, and 3. Level one is what we call groom techs, and we have a downloadable PDF on the ParagonPetSchool.com website that is, it's a document called Finding or Recruiting Future Groomers, and it's a guideline that allows us to identify places that these people are at right now. I've said before, when we're hiring, we can't just rely on Indeed or Monster or ZipRecruiter or, you know, the electronic job boards and such. We should still have a line in that water. We should still have something there. But we have to go recruit. In Florida, if you go to a seafood restaurant, the fish are not jumping in a seafood restaurant, right? You got to go fishing. That's the same way. You've got to recruit for these people. Where do we find these people? Well, we can find future groom techs and groomers maybe in 4-H clubs. Or, I mean, think about 4-H clubs. These kids are raising hogs and cattle and, you know, working a farm life. You think a little dog poo, dog pee, dog hair, dog noises, whatever's going to bother them? No. Right? The things are going to, that are probably going to bother some other type of people. So you've got 4-H, you've got scouting, which I mentioned earlier. You've got FFA, you've got a variety of different places. But one thing I think we absolutely have to do, if I can make any one recommendation that seems to be really the most powerful result-oriented recommendation, and that is employers need to talk to their local high school guidance counselors. And I'll tell you why. Because going away to college or university isn't for every high school graduate. Grooming is a trade. Grooming is right up there with the other trades, whether it be mechanic or electrician or plumber or carpenter or whatever those trades are. Grooming is a trade. And we have to start thinking about it that way. So if that's the case, maybe we'll talk to the high school guidance counselors. Maybe we'll provide them some information about our business and that we're willing to pay for, ideally, I would recommend, that our employers pay for their grooming students' enrollment. But if we're willing to pay for somebody's development, then we need to talk to our high school guidance counselors, make sure they know who we are. Because if, let's say it's a 17, 18-year-old young person, 16-year-old young person, who's going to seek advice from their guidance counselor on what they're going to do post-high school, the guidance counselor is going to ask them some questions. One of the answers might be, I like animals. Well, the guidance counselors immediately go to two choices, veterinarian or vet tech. They don't know any better. They don't know to say, hey, if you like animals, what about a career in dog grooming? You know that Betty's Pet Salon down the street, she pays for your education to learn dog grooming. Maybe that's something post-high school that you could consider. So if we don't know our high school guidance counselors by first name and communicate with them regularly, we might be missing a huge opportunity.
Very true. I remember at our salon, we have many, about 5,000 regulars at one point, and sometimes going within our clientele even and really, you know, talking with them. We got many leads on them. We also found that we had a university nearby that was for veterinarians, very prestigious. And it was amazed how many of them were willing to do part-time work because they go, you know what, I'm going to be a vet, but I won't to be touching pets much for 8 years. And I would love to be a groomer and earn some side money at the time. And actually some of them became groomers instead of veterinarians once they got their hands well-trained in it. And they were very flexible, and just to have that hands-on experience, and I can't agree with you more. It's something that we did a little bit with our local high school, was talking to some counselors, and that is a great idea. Now, you used the term a farm team. How do you form a farm team of qualified groom techs?
Right. So the very first thing that you need I would ask everybody to sort of kind of picture in their head, you know, we used to hire in my businesses, we used to hire what we called bather brushers, right? Sort of common term in the industry. But if you think about that, that term does not lend itself to thinking what could be the future of that person's job. For example, veterinarians have vet techs. Dentists have dental technicians, and there's all kinds of different, very similar type of relational positions, one showing more of the master of a trade and one showing one that's learning the trade. It could be a journeyman plumber, or, you know, it could be an apprentice carpenter, but there's these terms that we use, but bather brusher seems kind of dead end, right? So as we're recruiting people for this industry, even the title alone, the title elevates the professionalism, in the profession, in the industry. So, but this farm team approach, what I mean by that is begin by thinking, okay, the only way that I'm going to get to satisfying the need for more groomers is I've got to start with this entry-level position, which is groom techs. And if you think about like Major League Baseball, do you think that Major League Baseball teams wait for their star first baseman to either get injured, retire, or get traded? No. They're grooming, pun intended, his or her replacement already, right? So when something happens that's either planned or unplanned, they have this team, this farm team. They've got this group of people that they can then elevate up into that role, even if they need more training or more skill development. Well, the farm team approach, that's exactly that groom tech position. So you can have these groom techs, and in my model, everybody did their own dog start to finish. And we could go on for hours and hours and hours about why I believe that that is the best. But if you have groom techs who are taught to do their own dog start to finish, not only are they taught the techniques, but they're also taught time management of doing that. They're also taught the responsibility of doing that. They're taught the volume and variety of dogs that they can actually do in a day. And they feel more accomplished when they're doing their own dogs, their own work. And they're taught how to do this, but their own work start to finish. Otherwise, I've been this person. You're wet all day. You're hairy all day. You're hot all day. You've been doing all of the lifting, all of the brushing, all of the nail trims. You've been doing all of the dirty work. And some would say, well, that's how you learn in the industry. You know, I'd like to think that we should challenge ourselves to do things differently so that we can improve the outcome. If we keep doing things the way we've always done them, all we're going to get is the same outcome.
Mm-hmm. So what is, when you say grow your own groomers, now, what does that mean? Where does the using the services that you offer, I'm a business owner, what is it going to be like, the journey to grow that with your assistance? What do you offer them?
Sure. So multiple people have to be around the learner when the learner is developing their skills. So you have multiple people that are responsible for helping this person. So obviously you've got the student, right, the learner, okay? And if you're a grooming business owner out there, whether you're whether you groom or you don't groom, maybe you already have groomers, but our program at ParagonPetSchool.com, the Paragon School of Pet Grooming, we have a web-based skills development program, and it's based on Melissa's curriculum that we had in our on-campus facility for over 30 years, and now we redefine that and we refocus our energy so that we take that curriculum and we deliver it now in a reach we would have never had if we would have just stayed as an on-campus grooming school. And so we're actually shaping the career lives of people all over the world, any English speaking students. But it's not a simple process. It's not, learning grooming is not simple. But the process can be made simpler. What I mean by that is ours is a web-based program. In our program, the student takes baby steps along the way in our program to learn some of the most basic and most important fundamental aspects of learning the art of dog grooming. But we do not ask them, we do not make it even available to them to go through a whole program and then they're out on the street or they're asked to do internships or externships somewhere. Our program is meant for individuals can put themselves through the program or employers can put their students through the program by sponsoring them, paying for them, subsidizing their tuition, whatever. But if you just allowed somebody to go through all of the levels, all of the program from start to finish, all it would end up in is an exercise in memorization. So we put stage gates in the program, which means they have to read about it. They have to watch videos about it. They have to test on it. They have to submit photos of their work to their Paragon mentor. Their Paragon mentor is a member of the Paragon team that we partner up with every single student. Now, this is all done through the system. It's not in person, but they submit these photos for photo markups and grading and critiquing. The mentors are there to be supportive. The mentors are there to reset their test if they struggle with a test or fail a test. So we step in side by side as far as we can reach with a web-based program with the students. And the program then is stage-gated so that they have to complete and prove that they can do a function or a process or technique before they then go on to the next stage. And it is progressive, which means each stage adds on the previous stage. So by doing it, because we understand how people learn, we are really great at understanding how the learner mind operates and how it's applied to grooming. Because again, we've been doing this for over 30 years. So, but what's really great is that anybody that's in that student's bubble in the salon, maybe it's a previous graduate of level one, maybe it's another groom tech, or maybe it's a groomer. Whatever role that they're playing in the salon, they can also play what we call coach. And that coach is not somebody to train a new student, but somebody to be there to sort of play big brother, big sister, cheerleader, confidant, counselor, advisor, whatever we want to call them. But they're in that student's bubble. And we work with people and we help them become good coaches for those students as well. So the idea is to create an environment for learning inside the organization, inside the business. And that's a pretty special thing when that exists.
And so now I've followed your program. I've built up a good number of grooming professionals working for me. What does the owner need to do to be a prosperous owner in that I know how to keep these people employed? What do I need to do to know that I'm maintaining the skill sets of these people and all? Do you help people with that?
We do. So I've got some pretty solid advice. And the very first piece of advice is when you think you have enough staff, you don't. Because people can be people-y, right? So sometimes people will want to change and they will depart your organization. Or maybe they win the winning Powerball ticket. They buy the winning Powerball ticket and they can buy their own island. We don't know why people will leave. We just know the reality. If we can live in a space of embracing the reality of things, we know that it's probably not realistic to think we're going to be looking at the same set of faces next year as we're looking at today. So that's the very first thing. Embrace reality. People are going to be people-y. They're going to come and go, number one. So we should never be surprised by that. Number two, because now we are growing our team, we should always keep them growing. It's sort of like waves in an ocean. When one person graduates level one, we put somebody else into level one. That level one graduate, like I mentioned before, could be the coach for that new level one student. When that new level one student graduates, they now become the coach for the next one, and that level one coach goes into level two. And a level two graduate or another grooming professional in the business is coaching them. So we're actually relying on our grooming producers to coach one another, but they're doing it inside and around a proven curriculum, a proven system. But I will tell you, to answer your question, the number one reason why employees leave their employer is because they become disengaged. What I mean by that is loyal employees, the way to get to loyal employees is to keep our employees engaged. And one really great way to keep our employees engaged, two really top ways of keeping employees engaged, keep them learning. So always keep them learning. So promoting their learning, promoting their skills development, learn with them, side by side with them, encourage it amongst all of the people there, but keep them learning. As long as we're learning, we are engaging. Number two is recognition. And recognition could be something as cheap as a thank you, all the way up to and including maybe it's an equipment allowance that we put in place for people that stay with us. You stay with me for 6 months and there's a $300 equipment allowance waiting for you. So how great is that? You've got a professional groomer who it's hard to part $300 or $400 for that incredible pair of shears that they want. It's hard to part with that money from their own paycheck, their own income sometimes, but it's going to be something that's waiting for them once they hit these milestones in your business. There's all kinds of different retention strategies or recognition strategies, but you got to keep them engaged. The best way you keep them engaged, keep them learning and recognize them.
Well said. Well, what is the number one challenge we will face in the future of our grooming businesses now?
I think we will continue to face the staffing shortages. That might be number one. I think right behind that, we will face at some point some regulation from government. We will. To some degree, this might be a little polarizing, but to some degree, I think we should welcome it. If it's done correctly, I think we should welcome it, because there are certain people in our industry, and we know who they are. They're in every market, but there are some people in our industry that are not actively participating in raising the bar of professionalism. They're not actively participating in helping all of us that are in this incredible industry be seen as a first-class industry and not a second-class industry. So I think to some degree we will face that challenge, but let's prepare for that now. We don't have anything to worry about. If we're the people that squawk so loud about regulation and licensing and such are probably the people that are most afraid that what they're doing won't pass muster. So I think staffing is going to be a challenge. It's going to continue to be a challenge because people are peopling. And licensing and regulation at some point, to some degree.
I agree. So where do you see the grooming businesses going? Is there in the future, are they going to change in any way, do you think?
You know, I think they are changing already to some degree. I mean, we've got fewer and fewer purebred dogs out there, so we've got to understand how to answer the call for and embrace the thought of maybe doing the doodles and charging appropriately and those types of things, so that we can maintain our financial health while also taking care of the pets and the people that love them. What is the overall health of the grooming business? The grooming business is solid. Grooming business is absolutely solid. People are going to continue to own pets. You know, in economic challenging times like recessions or even the pandemic, you know, there's three industries that do really, really well in recessions, or let's call them not recession-proof but recession-resistant. And that could be just even economic swings, big economic swings in any one direction for whatever force. But there are three industries that continue to sort of do well through those economic trying times: babies, booze, and pets. So why? Because maybe, you know, we can't do a whole lot, but one thing we can do, maybe we start a family and we make babies, right? So the baby business is always recession resistant, and baby products and the like, you know, the different accessory products and things for babies. Booze, to some degree, people rely on booze for comfort. People rely on booze for pressure release. People rely, so booze is also a very strong recession-resistant industry. But pets is absolutely right in there, because pets are there because of the unconditional love that pets show. And there's just something therapeutic about having a pet and petting your pet. You know, some even dog trainers will tell you pets only get a certain amount of pleasure out of being petted. The greatest amount of pleasure is experienced by the pet parent. And I think because of grooming enhances that touch, that feel, you want to be around your pet because they smell better, they look better, they feel better. I think the grooming business is going to continue to be strong for as long as I can even predict.
Very well said. We're almost out of time here. This 45 minutes has gone by very quick. But why don't you tell people again how to get a hold of you and the services that are offered to that we've discussed?
Yeah, so it's very simple. Go to ParagonPetSchool.com, and that's all one word, ParagonPetSchool.com. And on ParagonPetSchool.com, you can learn everything about this, the distance learning program that we were talking about growing your own grooming staff. You can watch demos of the program, but absolutely also visit the Resource Center on ParagonPetSchool.com, the Resource Center. And when you land on ParagonPetSchool.com, one of the things that you might also consider, if you're an existing dog groomer and you want to take your skills to the next level, consider a membership in LearnToGroomDogs.com. That's LearnToGroomDogs.com. and it's an incredible membership. It's like Netflix for dog groomers. There's over 1,100 videos, all searchable by keyword and filterable by keyword. The membership and the membership group on a close Facebook group for the members, it just thrives. People that actively participate in that group.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today, Joe, and your great wisdom and helping with a bright outlook. And it's obviously the company has a great outlook on what can be done. And I know it works very well. I know people that have used it. They love it. So I'm glad you're out there supporting us and a part of the industry.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm always happy to participate in your events. Thank you again.
Okay. We'll be checking in with you again later. Thank you.